questions today. I'm one of your hosts, Rick Larson, and with me as always is our other host, Jeff Cardello. Jeff, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm showered. I have on a shirt that's only been worn once before, so pretty clean.
Nice, yeah.
Keeping it clean.
Clean, so fresh and so clean.
So fresh.
And and it's a WFMU shirt, so awesome.
It is.
Approved.
So, listeners, you should check that out, WFMU.org, for good music.
Yeah, awesome. And go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, please.
I was just going to announce to the world that I saw the movie Kung Fu Panda.
Okay.
And it was pretty watchable. It was not bad.
All right. I've never seen Kung Fu Panda.
That's my first Kung Fu Panda experience also. Yeah.
So we get one thumbs up. My thumb is yet to be determined.
It's ambiguous. Ambiguous. Well, should we introduce our guest?
Yeah, let me introduce our guest. Our guest today is Brandon Adamson. He's a musician, he's a writer, he's a man about town, he's a multi-talented guy. Brandon, what is something that the audience should know about you?
Well, I want to live forever.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Kind of.
But I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh.
No. Well, we can only hope you a long and semi-happy life.
Past performance is no indication of future results, but it seems to be working for you so far. You were currently alive, so yes. I can vouch for that. So.
Yeah. All right, we're all alive, we're all breathing, so this is good.
No spectral visit. I did try to start a rumor at my day job a couple weeks ago. I may have mentioned this already, but I tried to start a rumor that one of my coworkers was a ghost.
Okay.
So, I don't think anybody.
Are you the only one who can see this coworker? Because if you are, then it is.
Then it probably, an it probably actual is ghost. A ghost. Yeah, he is. He only stands at the top of the stairs, and you can kind of see through his spectral form, and he just kind of beckons you up the stairs into the attic. That's his main job there at work.
Do you? I think everybody has somebody that they know that claims to have seen a ghost, and they always whip out some kind of photo that's got like cigarette smoke or something that's like represented.
Oh, that's an orb. That's an orb.
It's an orb.
We were talking about an orb. Okay.
Yeah. The little dot, lens flare. Yes. We, one year in San Diego on vacation, took the haunted house tour where they drive you around on a bus, and then the houses are beautiful old houses, but they have like, they're definitely very touristy, so they have like Polaroids set out on the table of like, look at all these ghosts that have showed up in this house for the last 50 years.
Well, I had a neighbor in my apartment complex who, he had seen ghosts and he had seen UFOs. He'd seen a lot of things, and we shared a wall. We shared a closet wall between our closets, and he told me that he felt like there was a really bad energy in those closets, and that he felt like maybe someone had been confined in that closet. And that to alleviate the bad energy, I should burn some sage. Never burnt sage though, and look at the bad luck it brought me. I'm still in this apartment.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was really into the Ouija board. And for some reason, my mom was always down to like use the Ouija board with me, you know, and so, you know, I was very traumatizing because it would like, she would have it say all of this like this morbid stuff, and like I never realized that she was moving it, you know, the whole time. I thought that it was like this was legit and it was actually happening.
She was pranking you.
Yeah, but it was like, but the stuff that it was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to like contact these relatives, and also, you know, it was like telling us that she was going to die when she was like 45. You know, which was like coming up pretty quick. You know, at that time. So, you know, that traumatized me for a long time. And then years later, she reveals, she's like, oh, I was moving that. And I was thinking to myself, but like, if you were moving that, like, why were you, you know, I was like in fourth grade, like, why were you having it, like, say all this, like, horrifying stuff?
I mean,
like,
did it?
It should have just said, do your homework.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It never offered, like, practical advice, like, clean your room, eat more vegetables.
Drink your Ovaltine. That's what I would do to my kids if I had thought of that prank.
You recite quotes from a Christmas story, like
basically, yeah, that's pretty much what it would be. Then they would know it was me. They would be like, "Oh, you," singing "Fa ra 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 ra." That's also from Christmas Story. My wife has seen a skinwalker when she lived in northern Arizona. So she's not here to tell the story because she tells it much better than I do.
I like to look up weird videos on YouTube, and I did see which was supposedly a surveillance video of some skinwalkers. For those not familiar with a skinwalker, in Native American culture, it's kind of like a spirit, or
it's a shape-shifting monster.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of these like alien and monstery videos are like really just bad, like after effects. It was really fake. It looked like a video game. So
have you seen the prank ones where they show like it looks like the footage from Paranormal Activity, and then like a guy will walk out with in a sheet, and then it's got you. Those are my favorite. Well, we should answer an important question.
There are so many important questions.
So many of them. There are, in fact, 5 left in this batch, which means I will have to make more. All right, Brandon has selected the question, and now he's going to read it to the audience. Whoa, that is spooky. I saw it.
Yep. What is the deal with board games?
With board games.
Is the question. And
well, yeah.
I mean, we were just talking about the.
I just got
the Ouija chills. Boards. Yeah. That's creepy.
Yeah. And I mean, for those listening at home, there was a grouping of orbs around Brandon that actually moved his hand towards that question.
Yeah. And it jumped up right at the second before he grabbed it, leapt into his hand.
Yeah, and I didn't see these questions ahead of time, so it wasn't even a suggestive thing.
So, Ouija boards, manufactured by Milton Bradley?
Is it Parker Brothers?
Parker Brothers.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Before we had the internet, remember, like, in grade school, like, the big rumor was that Parker Brothers was satanic? You know, like, kind of like, I mean, that was in the 80s, like, almost everything was being accused of being satanic.
Yeah, but I think Johnson & Johnson was another. I had this book years ago that had all these theories in it, and There was one section about all the supposed
like Procter and Gamble.
Yeah, that's the other one.
There was more Satanism in the 80s. Why isn't there more Satanism now?
Nowadays, they just
I think that perhaps it already won out, you know. And so what we think of as the norm is just
we are all agents of Satan, especially this podcast.
Like society became so depraved that like Satanism was no longer needed, you know.
Okay,
The the market completely deteriorated.
Well, I do feel like I see them show up a lot, like protesting, like prayer in government meetings and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
moved on to just being like smart-ass atheists.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Boyd Rice era is over, and now it's just kind of what are they? They're probably like part of like Anonymous now or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But I always kind of growing up in the satanic rock era, it always kind of made me like roll my eyes because I kind of knew there was some element of like, I'm doing this to piss off my parents, and they would like get to a certain age and settle down and have kids and then kind of turn into those parents. And
I was always like, as a young child, I was afraid by like what I thought satanic music, like I was afraid of about things I thought might be satanic, like I knew nothing of their music, but when I would see Grateful Dead stickers, like, that was the most terrifying thing. I didn't realize it was a bunch of hippies on acid. I'm like, yeah. Grateful Dead, like, this skeleton. I'm like, that's really scary.
Yeah, yeah, and a bunch of teddy bears walking around as if possessed. I think it's, yeah, that is weird, because I kind of didn't hear what they sounded like for years. I knew of their existence, and the iconography is very creepy.
Yeah, and there was always that thing where, oh, if you play this record backwards or something, it says something like, where, you know, I never grew up like religious or anything, but it's weird when you're a kid, like that stuff really is, you know, mystical and scary. What's funny is when I look back to things that scared me when I was a kid, probably the most horrifying thing for it was I had this like talking Pee Wee Herman doll, and when it was in my, it was one of the things where you, you know, you pull the string and he says like one of his catchphrases, like, I know you are, but what am I, or something like that. And I actually made my mom remove that from my room because it was at night or whatever, like you thought that it could just potentially start talking on its own. That scene from Poltergeist, you know, with the doll, the clown doll.
And I love Pee-wee, but I could definitely see, because I had that doll too, and I could definitely had that, like, I'm gonna be really
scary. It had
scary
that potential.
It could have easily turned into a Talking Tina situation.
If the Talking Pee Wee Herman doll ever became, you know, self-aware.
When my oldest son was 3 years old, I lived in an apartment in the same complex, like one building over from a really good friend of mine who was a huge Star Wars fan, and he had this Darth Vader bank that you would put the money in, and then Darth Vader would move a little bit, and he would say, like, impressive. Most impressive, and quote some stuff from the movie before he saved your money for you. And my son was terrified of that thing. He was like couldn't go anywhere near it. But if we went to their apartment, they had to bring it out and put it in the middle of the room, because if he couldn't see it, it could be anywhere. So he didn't want it sneaking up behind him.
Well, my dad, he's a retired doctor, but he had this like ceramic monkey that was dressed. It was probably a gift from like a colleague or a patient, but it was this ceramic monkey that was dressed up in a doctor's outfit, and behind it, it had its hands behind its back, and behind its back was like a huge giant syringe.
Oh.
And I was so scared of that. Like, I knew that it was going to become sentient and just plunge that syringe, like, into me. I was terrified.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still terrified of syringes. Not actually afraid of needles, but usually because of some sort of, like, hypochondriac, like, medical test that I'm getting an injection like that.
Yeah, that does have that's like a grown-up kind of scared. Like, oh, I'm getting medical. I'm getting evaluated for something.
I'm getting blood taken. I'm going to get tested for something. Yeah. It's horrifying, you know?
I remember there was a kid's book that, I can't remember if my parents had it, because I was very little when I had this book, but it was either my parents or my grandparents or my aunts, because I didn't see the book all the time, but... And it was like one of those really super old-fashioned ones where there's like four pictures in the whole thing, and it's the size of a phone book and super boring for kids. But one of the illustrations was this like Jack-in-the-Box man that had come to life, and he was like leaping happily, but he had this like devil face. And I remember he was kind of morphing through the bedroom wall, and you could see the next room a little bit, and like his leg and his part of his hand were already... through the wall into the next room, and that thing freaked me out so bad for so many years. I can still kind of half see, a lot of the details are hazy now, but I can still see his evil face as he walked right through a wall.
which yeah, this reminds me of another childhood fear, which once again is primate related. When I was a kid, if there was anything Planet of the Apes, like if I saw anything related to that, it would just scare me so much. Like I would, it's just terrified me.
Wow. Well, yeah.
Yeah, that reminds me actually. I'm really a big fan of the Planet of the Apes cartoon series from the 70s, which is very short-lived, but I've watched it a lot of times, and I keep thinking, like, wow, kids watch this on Saturday morning, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, I wouldn't say that it's like super adult-themed or whatever, but I could see why children would be scared of it or something. It was very kind of high level for like a kids.
It's pretty
kids
nihilistic
cartoon.
Too. The whole series is pretty bleak. I remember I didn't see the live action TV show until I was an adult, and that one's hard to watch though because it's
there's a live action
only a few episodes, and I don't know if they've gone back and restored it since I saw it, but I remember they were like, here's this rarely seen show, and they were running it for a long time on TV, and like the films were Hollywood films with budgets, and the TV show was not, so it was obviously shot on like 1970s videotape, and it's like the picture quality is so awful, it's hard to even...
Yeah,
watch.
I own it on DVD, the TV series, so I've seen it before, and I know what you mean. To me, like the actual film quality of it is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's like maybe that typical 70s TV like Charlie's Angels and that kind of stuff was full on. One thing I noticed is that the the masks and everything, that kind of stuff definitely deteriorate. I mean, you're not quite getting into like Chuck E. Cheese territory, like, animatronic band, but it's definitely less. But I find that the magic of the show is still still there. The whole series, I own all of it. I'm a huge fan of Planet of the old ones, not to it's not starting with the Mark Wahlberg and then the newer ones where it's like all like digitized apes, made by some guy who graduated from DeVry or something.
No, yeah, I think the original one, the first one especially, holds up really really well, and I've told people like that was for me what Star Wars is to everybody else my age, because I would watch those every time they came on TV. I knew all the apes were. I had for years the like 12-inch action figures of Dr. Zaius and the Gorilla General or something. He didn't even have a real name for the toys. And the astronaut, the Charlton Heston astronaut. I had a toy of him too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that the sequels are clearly not as good, but in a way like they get really creative. So they're still in the directions they go and whatnot, and you can like, okay, this is kind of a lame sequel. Charlton Heston's only in it for like 5 seconds, and they build him like top billing. But the directions that they go in are just like so creative that they're each good in their own way. Even the last one, Battle for the Planet of the Apes, even though you could tell it's just got like a pitiful budget, and they show footage of the same treehouse getting blown up like over and over, the same shot, they repeat it like 7 times, but the message and the kind of vibe is still the same.
I love it, but we obviously didn't have Jeff's traumatic early
viewing
experience.
I mean, I as an adult, I have seen the original Planet of the Apes movies, and I did get my childhood fear is over, but it took me a good 30-something years.
Still have memories of that.
Yeah.
I remember, it wasn't a fear thing, but I remember actually crying after seeing the trailer for the first Police Academy movie. And I was probably 10, 9, 10, 11, somewhere in that range, because
it was the guy making the noises with his mouth.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, that's
how can a human do that?
That's so depressing. No, it was, there's a joke where the guy who likes all the guns is walking down the street, and a little girl's like, "Can you rescue my cat out of a tree?" And he's like, "Sure." And he shoots the cat out of the tree.
Oh my God.
And I still, like, it still seems like needlessly transgressive for such a goofy movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, that's a kitty. So,
yeah, well, that reminds me of recently we went to see the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, okay.
I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 movie or something was playing on, or maybe it was the first one. I can't remember, but.
Was it the Vanilla Ice one?
Well, you know, they all kind of have that.
They all, yeah. if they don't literally have Vanilla Ice, they all have a Vanilla Ice.
They have those early 90s kind of just wacky, yeah. Wacky villains and whatnot. But there was a scene in there where we were watching it, and you know, somebody from the Foot Clan or whatever, like, he just punches April in the face and like knocks her out. And it's just like so fast, like it's nothing, you know, and almost like with like a laugh track or something. Yeah. It's just like, and we were watching, we're just like, whoa, like,
oh yeah,
that it's just changed so much that you a lot of the comedy and stuff that was in those films, they got away with a lot of
the things. Amount of violence in movies that were geared towards kids at that time is pretty crazy. Like, I don't know, has anyone rewatched any of the Gremlins movies? Those are super violent.
Yeah.
When he's got the saw thing that he throws, I can't remember. I don't even know what those things. The saw blade, you know, these chucking.
Oh
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't, and I've been meaning to subject my older kids to those because they were such a big deal when I was a kid.
Yeah, I still have those read along records from all of the Gremlins series. You had, if you were a kid in the 70s or 80s, like, you had to have those read along records, you know, like the Black Hole and all.
Oh,
those.
Yeah.
I still have all of mine, and the Gremlins ones, I think you got them for free with like a meal at Hardee's or something.
Oh,
like that.
Wow.
It was one of, you remember how you could they do that? Like, you know, you could get like the California raisins and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I still have that kind of stuff, but I have the read-along records for Gremlins. But I haven't, you're right, I haven't seen the original probably since like 1992 or something. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, it's been, I remember watching it on TV years and years and years ago. Yeah. But it would be worth revisiting, because, and I think the second one is very different, but I think it like has grown a cult following because it is actually pretty great. Like, it went more for comedy with that one.
Yeah, well, but I think that I feel like that one is just it's on TV more, you know, because when I remember seeing that being on a lot more on HBO and Showtime. I almost rarely see the original, but I do think there's probably more to the sequel. It definitely has a cult following because it has a wacky office building set up. And then there's the whole like sexual harassment subplot or whatever. Doesn't he have that boss that's like always like trying to hook up with him, even though he's got a girlfriend? Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah, sexual harassment was a big theme in 80s entertainment. And we talked about it on this podcast before, like the movie 9 to 5.
Uh-huh.
Is bonkers. I've been watching a lot of WKRP in Cincinnati lately.
That's a great show.
Yeah, it's really like it really gained momentum. Like, the pilot's kind of weird, and then the first episode, like, Les Nessman is accused of being gay or something. Like, he can't cover the basketball reporting because they think he's gay, and like he gets on a ledge and like threatens to like jump off. So it doesn't start out that great, but it gets a lot better. But yeah, like, sexual harassment in WKRP is like a huge thing. Like, the Lonnie Anderson character is sexually harassed by many different men on that show.
Yeah.
But I don't feel like the show really endorses it, though, because the people who do it are always really portrayed as kind of slime bags.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean? Herb. Like,
yeah.
Herb is the sleaziest, one of the sleaziest television characters ever.
Right, he's like a Leisure Suit Larry, basically.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, my dad loved that show so much. I haven't seen it in years, and I'm having trouble remembering who Herb is.
He's the...
I know Johnny Fever and...
Yeah, Herb was like the head of sales, of course, and he wore very loud plaid jackets, and he's always like asking the Lonnie Anderson character like when they're going to get married or like when they're going to go out on a date, and...
And I was going to say Harold Boom Boom Washington, but he was actually on Welcome Back, Kotter, which is a completely different show. Yeah, so I think I have the
Gordon Jump was on that show, right?
And yes,
he was also in the famous Different Strokes episode.
Oh yeah,
the creepy one where
child molestation or where I think Dudley gets sexually molested, but who's
but actually, you know, I have a story about like WKRP in Cincinnati. When I first moved to Phoenix and, well, permanently moved there in 1996, my first apartment, it was just some super ghetto, like one bedroom apartment, and it just came with basic cables. So all basically the only two channels we got were the E channel and the Family channel. Like
I've lived in apartments like that.
And
I remember
maybe like a C-SPAN 2 or something like that. And so anyways, back then, this in the mid-90s, the E! Channel sold, or they showed reruns of WKRP in Cincinnati and One Day at a Time. And I moved here. I didn't have any friends, so I watched those religiously. They had those and also Melrose Place reruns. But I remember just WKRP in Cincinnati was on at like 6 a.m., they had a 70s like morning series of that, One Day at a Time, Alice. And I would get up at 6 in the morning every day to watch those three shows. And when I first got into recording music, like on 4-track, I actually recorded covers of the WKRP in Cincinnati theme song. Cincinnati with Phoenix, you know, replacing the lyrics like to suit me. And I've lost those recordings.
Hey, we could have that audio for the audio.
I wish, but unfortunately, a lot of those 4-track recordings did not survive numerous moves.
Oh, man.
No, I know how that goes. I had a lot of comics that I made in high school that didn't survive. That kind of piggybacks on something we had come up in conversation of months ago, and on the show, and then with the Kesha thing that's been in the news lately.
I literally have no idea what's going on.
So apparently she was assaulted by her producer, and so wants out of her contract and doesn't want to work with him. But they're saying, no, you have a contract. You need basically to do 3 more albums with this guy or whatever it is. And so she basically can't do anything unless it's with him. So she's kind of frozen out of her career. So somebody suggested that she should do
Van Morrison.
The Van Morrison revenge album thing.
And what was the name of that song? Like, Give Me a Sandwich or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Do you want a cheese Danish?
Do you want a cheese Danish? Okay.
Well, the one, because it was on an NPR show, and they used the song that I had forgotten about, because I don't have on my iPod, is the one where he sings about, like, I could tell from looking at your face that you have ringworm. And there was apparently some employee of the record company that was at the office the day he did this.
Oh.
So he's got like 3 songs on there about George and how dumb he is. It's like, there goes Dumb Dumb George, and here comes Dumb Dumb George.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure that they have some like clause in there that would make it difficult for her to do that, but I bet if she did it anyways, that people would buy it just to help her out and meet whatever kind of threshold she has to meet to not owe any money for...
I would.
Yeah, and you know, I can kind of see the perspective, like, you know, the guy hasn't been found guilty of anything yet, so you know, it could be very easy to argue that like well, we can't let you out of the contract because this is just an accusation. Like, if he was found guilty, you know, then we would give you all this money back and we would let you out of it. Yeah. But from it puts her in a really difficult position because, you know, this trial could drag on for years. And
It's hard. It's a hard thing to prove.
Yeah, and it's it puts her in a really difficult position, but I think that there's got to be a way for her to not have to work with them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think on that note, we're going to take a little bit of a break.
Yeah, we're going to brainstorm 5 ways to get her out of the contract.
We're going to come up with it.
We're going to solve this.
We're going to crack this case. All right, we'll be...
Okay, we're back from break.
Okay, yeah, that was a great break. So are we ready to present our five ideas?
I actually literally completely forgot that this was a segment. There's 5 ideas to get Kesha. Is that the proper word?
Yes, I think that's how you pronounce the dollar sign. I'm not 100% sure.
The dollar sign, it's not silent.
Well, you know, I am a big fan of freeing Kesha. So I think that anytime... someone wants to, you know, get out of a contract or any kind of slavery to their capitalist overlords, I'm completely in favor of that.
Yeah.
You know, whether they're in the right or wrong, you know, I'm going to have their back. But isn't there like some kind of solution where she still records music for this label but doesn't have to have any dealing with this particular producer? That seems to be like a pretty...
Apparently yeah. not. And apparently it has to do with like her first recordings were financed by him. So I don't know if she just has to pay him back for that or if there's legitimately like she... So I was thinking my proposal number one would be that she do an album that's entirely covers of John Cage's 433.
Okay.
Which I hope are the right numbers.
Yeah, that's the right.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's the right number. Yeah.
Well, that's close enough for me.
Yeah.
If not, I mean, it's a cover. You have some creative license there. And the whole point of that was to hear like the background noises and like the city noises and wherever it was performed. So. Like, it could be 10 tracks of that, but they would all be different because they'd record one in the morning, one next to the freeway. And yeah, so I think that's...
Okay. Yeah, I think she should just not do it, you know?
And
I think that if she were just to not do it and just let them sue her or fine her or whatever they're going to do, whatever kind of penalty, I think that people would pay to get her out of it. She would get the money.
She could raise a Kickstarter to pay off whatever breach of contract suit was filed. I like that as option two.
Yeah. You know, forget those GoFundMes for people with cancer. I want my money to free her from her contract.
Yeah. Well, you know, I did see that. I did see that someone started one for Kanye West because he was in like $50 million debt or something.
Yes, yes.
And then it had already, was at like $40,000
or
something.
Oh, wow. When I saw it was at like $3,600. But wow, that's...
Yeah, but I think that, you know, she should just not do it.
Yeah.
And that would be a good solution.
Yeah,
or just
defy it, yeah.
You know, we can get somebody involved. You know, the UN can get involved. You know, somebody can do it.
I think a good
Obama, Trump, maybe. You know?
A good option three would be for her to take up ventriloquism, and then she'd be like, "I'm not singing this song. It's the puppet.
Okay,
it's Mr. Peanut." Yeah.
I mean, it's sad that ventriloquism hasn't solved more of our world's problems.
Yeah, yeah. I think. Really, or can you think of a situation that couldn't use ventriloquism to get out of?
I don't know. But yeah, I mean, isn't Kesha just a a puppet of the music industry. Like, she's the voice.
Yeah, is it, there's already ventriloquism going on, right?
Yeah, I guess the multinational corporations. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I feel slightly guilty about this, but because I had actually heard of her before this happened, which is not the case with a lot of pop music for kids. But my sister, who lives in Wisconsin, and her daughter had this inside joke when that girl Rebecca Black had that song Friday that everybody was making fun of for being so terrible. And I stepped into the conversation to say, I don't really think she's that much worse musically than whatever the Kesha song that was popular at the time. And they got mad at me. So I was like, oh, it's definitely better. She's definitely better than... But I still, like... If you put both of them on, I wouldn't... I mean, I maybe could tell them
right,
apart.
Right, you wouldn't necessarily...
They're very
similar. It's essentially the same style of music.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
I don't know. I always thought Kesha was really pretty. You know? Like, she had really pretty feet,
okay.
I remember,
okay.
in her videos. And I think that...
That might be.
Now I feel bad that I was, like, objectifying her in this way. That she's gone through this kind of, like... That's just how everyone saw her as this... But I think that a lot of these stars like Kesha and I think a lot of them are really, really talented. They're just, it's a shame that they're packaged and fed this garbage that that they become like this kind of garbage product. Whereas I think if in the hands of having, you know, better creative encouragement, like it's a lot better things could come out of these pop stars.
Some of them are undeniably definitely more musically talented than me.
Right. And, you know, that's why I almost I felt bad when I saw that that Rebecca Black video, mm-hmm. because I think, gee, you know, that could have easily, like, I've definitely recorded worse music than that on 4-track in my room before, you know, like screwing around. So you almost feel bad that it's like for her, because you can see yourself in that situation, especially now everything is so amplified that almost anything you put out there can be popular and made fun of by these masses of people. But she was just a kid too. What
was
she
like
14 or 15?
Yeah.
I mean, I was, you know, I was making weirder stuff than that when I was like in my 20s, you know, that could have easily been
mocked
worldwide. Yeah. Luckily it was put out at a time when, you know, when all it reached was, a couple of crappy, like, indie zines that were made at Kinko's or something were the only bad reviews.
I've never seen that Rebecca Black thing, but I mean, I think it's like, it's really unfair for, you know, just like the bullying and ganging up. It's like this person that was like her honest, like artistic, like creative thing that she did, and like to people just pile on and, you know, it just seems really unfair. I really like watching on YouTube, like high school bands doing really like terrible covers of things. But for me, I don't watch it, like I don't look down on it. It just reminds me of when I was in high school making horrible music. Like there's some really good horrible renditions of like Welcome to the Jungle, where it's amazing how terrible it is, but there's something very like, I give people credit for trying. Like, for putting it out there and trying.
I think that's a very good attitude to have. And I think, generally, I do that, too. So, but... And it's all subjective, anyway, I mean, really, when it comes down to it. I did hear an amazing woman who plays... covers of like rock and blues song on this like 1,000-year-old Korean folk musical instrument that I can't think of the name of, that That was pretty good. I'll have to post YouTube links to that.
Okay. Yeah, I think I saw that pop up in my feed today too. Yeah.
Pretty great stuff. I wonder if we could tie it back though for option four, and have somehow, like, instead of releasing recorded music, she could write songs through the use of a Ouija board.
Yeah.
And like tape that maybe, or.
Yeah. Or I was thinking like she could play, like, the head of the record company in chess. Like, whoever went, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Kind of like a seventh seal.
Exactly, sort of for her soul.
On a desolate, windswept beach. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be the most appropriate game. Maybe something like a Hungry Hungry Hippos, or no. something that's a little bit...
a little bit more modern, more with it.
Well, yeah, and you don't know how good a chess player... I don't know how good a chess player Kesha is, but that's...
You know. If she's as good a chess player as she is a rapper, right? She's a good rapper, right? I think I've heard her raps, and they're
and
good.
Those things usually go together really well.
Yeah. Like LL Cool J, he's really great at chess.
Yeah.
Little known fact.
Yep.
Which does bring us back to board games. Go ahead.
I was going to say, don't call it a comeback. Is about when you're behind, but you get that pawn across to the end of the board
and exchange it
for a queen. Yeah.
Mama said knock you out. He's obviously talking about being in a checkmate type position.
Yes. With the queen. So we do know other chess pieces. The queen comes up an awful lot in LL Cool J songs.
Yes.
Did any of you guys ever get into chess? At all, I found that I studied it briefly, but I was always wanting to use like openings, just like if I thought they sounded cool, you know, like the four pawns attack and things like that. So I ended up not being very good because I used things that I had learned just because they seemed like cool, cool sounding openings and things like that. Where really they weren't.
I think in sixth or seventh grade I learned the rules of chess, but I never really stuck with it long enough to actually learn like strategies and winning at chess.
I tried playing chess for a little bit, but I'm horrible at anything that I have to think three steps ahead. Like, I'm terrible at Connect Four, which isn't a very good side.
Yeah, I don't know. I was pretty good at chess. Like anything else, I just didn't apply myself, you know, really well. So I did used to play it against my ex-girlfriend, Brandy, though, and she would always, at a certain point, if she was beating me or something, like, I beat her every single time we ever played, but she would, sometimes if she was almost, like, winning or something, and then she would make a bad move or something, and then she would just, get really upset and knock all the pieces off the board. And that was the end of the game. So it made it somewhat less enjoyable, but in a way more enjoyable also, knowing that could potentially happen.
My lady friend is really good at strategy type things. So if we're playing Scrabble, like, I just get decimated. Like, I just get just completely annihilated.
Well, I feel like you're too honest for a game like Scrabble, Jeff. You know, it requires like some...
Does it
like,
require
no, really,
deceit?
This is a word, you know?
There's that whole... Yeah.
I was always too honest for board games, too, because I still remember very, very vividly the exact scenario when I caught my brother cheating at Battleship, because... I had one hit, and then I went all the way around and somehow completely encircled this one hit and didn't hit the other half of his little destroyer. And I'm like, you are obviously cheating. And I don't think we ever played Battleship again. But I was always jealous of when I'd see the commercials for the electronic one, because I don't think you can cheat an electronic Battleship.
You can't.
Like, I think it,
the electronic.
It's locked in. It keeps track of where you were,
What about Monopoly? Like, what were you? I always would go for the railroads and like the utilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, when I played Monopoly.
Yeah, I was.
Did you play it the way where you get the free parking money or not?
Oh, yeah,
that was always
yeah.
a controversy, no. you know?
I did play it where you would get the free parking money, but, yeah, I was always terrible at Monopoly, too. Yeah, I would go for, yeah. like, you know, your Broadway and your Park Place, like, try and line that up, but, yeah. yeah, I just was not good at, like, fine-tuning my strategy throughout the game.
Now, is it true that the game of Monopoly actually has an end, or is every Monopoly game ever just ended with like somebody being like, "All right, I'm bored. Let's go do something else."
Yeah,
yeah. I have
never played. Through
I've
to
played
the
it
end.
In its entirety a oh, few yeah? times. Yeah. It definitely it requires a playing partner with some
patience.
Yeah, with some patience and who doesn't get bored easily, which probably would eliminate 90% of people, you know, under the age of 25 now. I don't think
yeah.
they would be able to sit through a game of Monopoly. I mean, you go through like a 2 text message conversation and it's like...
So yeah. wait, what happens at the end of a game of Monopoly?
Well, one player goes bankrupt and eventually someone has all of the... all of the money, you know,
much like our current capitalist system.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a microcosm of.
And it may be an urban legend. It may be true, but have you heard that, like, the game was rewritten to be more pro-capitalist? Like the original version was.
It was like a Jim Jones
satirical. Yeah. Yeah. It was like a socialist guy in New York somewhere.
I could see that.
Game, and then he sold it, and then the version that they now sell is modified slightly to be more like, you know, win with getting all the toys.
Right. Whereas you could kind of see that in some of the imagery. I don't know if they use the same one, but you can see it that there was like a kind of a stereotypical. Yeah. Robert Barron or something like
yeah,
that. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I always like to imagine that that guy was Richie Rich's real dad.
Oh, okay.
Oh. I he's been the my memory of him has been kind of tainted by like all of those McDonald's Monopoly and those.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh.
You know, commercials with him here. There's actually a Monopoly themed slot machine too in Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Which
yeah.
I'm sure is a great way to make $100 disappear in about 20
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah. Those themed slot machines are very bizarre to me because they don't seem to have any connection to. I don't imagine like the person playing the CSI Miami slot machine is a big fan of. Well, maybe that's a bad example, but it just seems to me like they put a lot of effort into. Giving them themes and the person playing doesn't care.
Yeah, well, I feel like those themed ones are they're there to make up for the fact that you're going to lose a bunch of money. So it's
yeah.
like, mm-hmm. hey, this slot machine pays out like almost nothing, but we're going to make up for it by like making it about your favorite TV show or movie.
Yeah.
You know?
I had a good one in the front of my brain of like the most ridiculous one that I'd seen, and I can't remember.
Leaving Las Vegas themed.
That would be amazing. Yes.
I've seen an airplane themed one. I just remember it said on there, you know, like that quote, you know, "I am serious and don't call me Shirley."
Oh,
like,
oh
nice.
Wow. Yeah. That's very specific.
Does it have like Barbara Billingsley doing her jive?
You know, honestly, I've seen so many of the like the Sex in the City theme slot machine and
okay,
there's
really
so many.
Really pop. Well, and maybe Vegas is different from like the casinos in Arizona that I associate with like 70-year-old people. you know, sidling up to the slot machine with their oxygen tank next to them.
Up to like the McHale's Navy themed slot machine.
Okay, if there's a McHale's Navy themed slot machine, I'm going tonight. I'm going right now. In fact, I can't even finish this show. I have to.
Oh gosh.
I have to go see. Was Phil Silvers in the, now I might be getting too obscure. Was he in the movie version or just the TV show?
I don't know.
That's your homework, listeners.
Please let us know.
Is flood my my Twitter timeline with Phil Silvers trivia, and I'll love you forever. Who I always knew him from. He has like a very brief moment in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Okay.
Or maybe he's one of the main characters. I haven't seen that one in a while either. That's another one that bears revisiting.
I saw it a few years ago, and I can't remember which character. Of course, like as I was watching it, I looked up all the characters to see like who was, if anyone was still alive.
You know?
And there was one character, I can't remember his name, who was still alive, and he's like 95 or something. And then I can't remember his name, but he was in the one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes, which was Death Ship, you know, where they're all on this this spaceship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they crash onto this planet, and they're just kind of stuck there, and they don't know what's going on. They keep doing the same things over and over, and you know, not to give it away or anything, but it's like one of the you know, it's one of the creepiest episodes because they're trying to figure out like if they might be dead or not, and they're kind of caught in this loop where their ship keeps crashing and they keep trying to do different things to make it not.
I do kind of remember this one. I can't remember the actor on it. The one surprisingly that I was surprised made it a long time was Buddy Hackett was still around when they made The Little Mermaid.
Oh my God!
Like the voice of the seagull. And, yeah.
But I feel like on the Twilight Zone, that theme of figuring out if you were dead or not like came up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because there was the one where the pilot, like the World War II pilot, like crashed in the desert and was like trying to find his crew. And then he ended up like waking up in a hospital. Like there's like a lot of that.
Right. And then on the newspaper, like the people are disappearing.
Oh, yeah, and the one where like the four people just kind of wake up randomly in this completely round room with no doors.
Oh,
and
that's
and
it's five characters in search of an exit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
That's a good one.
And that is a
they're
classic,
trying to figure out where they are and like how to get out.
Yeah.
But it's tough to. I think Jack Klugman is the actor I was thinking of who was in that.
Oh yeah.
He was also in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, right?
Yes. And wasn't he Quincy?
I think so. I do know that he did finally die like last year or something. But okay. I remember when I watched It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, I was thinking like, yeah, there's no way any of these. The men were all old and like.
Oh, they were.
And
yeah.
looked unhealthy like at that time. You know what I mean? Just kind of like. That era where they probably all smoke and drank and didn't eat well, and you're thinking like, okay, 50 years later, none of these dudes are alive, but he was. I was really amazed by that.
And they had a lot of. It's weird to think about now because it's all the past for us, but like a lot of them had been big stars in like the early 50s, late 40s, and this was kind of their comeback. Like I think Spencer Tracy is the chief of police. And, you know, you think about, like, as a kid growing up in the 80s, because I watched that movie in school. Like, one of my teachers was like, you know what we're going to do today, kids? We're going to watch It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. It was the last day of school. And all of the other teachers, 2 years in a row, we watched Old Yeller on the last day of school.
Yeah, I think every 80s kid had that experience of, like, of watching some old family movie at school or something. I definitely remember a viewing of Bye Bye Birdie. And,
okay.
You know, just they picked like the most kind of like a like generic family friendly movie, but like totally dated for that time too. They weren't going to show like Neverending Story or like Flight of the Navigator or something. It was always something
It was their favorite movie when they were kids.
Right. I think probably the coolest or like most normal movie we watched in there was Flight of the Navigator.
Which was
actually contemporary. That was the coolest. And then we also watched the old version of Willy Wonka's in the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. I don't remember that happening, but I could definitely see that. That would have been one that one of our teachers would have picked. And maybe that happened for another class. But I had one, like, wacky teacher who showed us It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And I don't remember. I don't think he was the same teacher that showed us The Red Balloon. That's like a short film where the kid's following a balloon around. Or the balloon is following the kid around. But yeah, I don't think, at least at the school I taught at, and I was also teaching much older kids. I was teaching high school. That was a huge, huge no-no. Like, and it was stupid, too, because I had, like, seniors. And the last day of school for seniors is, there's no point. You know, you've turned their grades in a week ago. They all know it. So I was like, but still try to make it meaningful and educational. It's like, I think you're fooling yourself.
Right. That's like the those scenes from Dazed and Confused, you know, the film there where they're like talking about Gilligan's Island and stuff like that, the last day of school. Like, that's a lot of what I remember. You know, Grant, I went to high school in the early 90s, so it wasn't the same stuff, but it was definitely the same kind of vibe where it's the last day of school and everyone's just doing whatever and they still kind of try to make a show of class.
Speaking of the last day of school, we're at the end of this podcast. This is our last day of school. Well, not really.
It's our last minute of content.
Yeah, that was my attempt at a segue that
I
don't know. Audience.
That was a solid, solid segue.
Yeah, I think so. I'm ready for summer vacation. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, should we all give out some plugs?
Yeah, let's do that. Brandon, what projects or what do you want people to check out that you are involved with?
I mean, you can check out my website, my main one. BrandonAdamson.com. It has links to a lot of my music and writing, things like that. And I'm actually working on an EP that I'm going to put out on vinyl.
Oh, cool!
In the next couple months. So, you know, watch out for that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Rick, what do you have for the people?
I have very vague, sketchy details on it right now. But in April, the Bird City Comedy Festival is coming to Phoenix. And we're going to be taping a live episode of this show with some special guests who we're still scheduling and... at a time of day that we're still determining, but all of those details should be out, I'm guessing, no later than the end of this week or so, or definitely by the 1st of March.
Yeah, we'll post up on the Facebook page the details for you, so you should definitely check that out.
Yeah, awesome. And Jeff, what do you have to plug?
Check us out at Bird City. Follow me on Twitter at jcardello. And that's all I really have.
Yeah, well, if you're listening to this like right when it comes out, we are also going to be attempting to record a live, very differently formatted episode at the Torch Theater on the 27th of February. We're going to be telling monologues in between improvised scenes, and hopefully that will come out as a bonus episode.
Yeah,
can listen to.
That would be cool.
Awesome, and you can check me out on Twitter at rlarson4. So thanks, Brendan, for coming out. Thanks to Gangplank for putting us up.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming out.
Thanks to the listeners for listening, and enjoy the rest of your internet.